The Equest Podcast, Funds Industry Conversations.
Demystify funds regulation and jargon with the Equest Academy. Tailored funds industry training programs to help you march up the learning curve.
Hello podcast listeners. Welcome to the Equest Podcast First 18 Special Series. First 18 is a special report that Equest is producing for newly authorised fund management companies. It's called From Survive to Thrive, and it maps out the key challenges that a newly authorised fund management company is likely to face in the first 18 months, in addition to giving some tips and guidance and insight on how to navigate those challenges. To coincide with the publication of First 18, we're producing this special series of podcasts, and in each episode, we meet with an industry expert and go through one of the key challenges that a manco is likely to face, and provide some insight and guidance on what to do. Before we launch into the podcast, I wanted to let you know about a training event that Equest is hosting on the 28th of June in the brand new business school in Trinity College, Dublin. It's called Funds Masterclass, and it's a one-day masterclass for Irish funds professionals providing key technical, regulatory and compliance training. We have a packed agenda of all things topical in our industry. We have a session on CP86, what to expect when you're being inspected, to help firms prepare for a central bank inspection on CP86. We also have detailed training on fund administrator outsourcing, depository record keeping and segregation, and then a session on financial stability and investment funds, looking at what all of that means for us. So if you're interested and you'd like to come along, check out equest.ie and you'll find all the details for the agenda and how to sign up and get your tickets before they're all sold out. Okay, that's the housekeeping out of the way. Now let's crack on with the podcast.
The Equest Podcast, Funds Industry Conversations.
Hello, welcome to the fourth in our special series of podcasts to coincide with the launch of our special report, First 18, From Survive to Thrive, a roadmap for newly authorised fund management companies to help them through the first 18 months and guide them through the key challenges that await them. For this episode, we're particularly looking at regulatory challenges, what it's like to be regulated in Ireland and supervised by the Central Bank of Ireland. To join me is my co-host Dave Montgomery from Eisner Ampner. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Danny. Thanks for having me here today.
Let's have a little bit of an intro about yourself, Dave.
Hi, I'm a partner on the risk and regulatory side of the house with Eisner Ampner. We work with financial services companies in Ireland. We work with international firms trying to access Europe through Ireland, and we work with government departments. And by way of background, Danny, as you and I know, we both worked in the central bank.
That's
I was
right.
There for about 12 years, six in supervision and then six building the PRISM framework at the time. So,
oh, that's a very nice segue, because I want to talk about PRISM.
All right.
So in this episode, we want to talk a little bit about what it's like for newly authorised MANCOs to deal with the regulatory regime in Ireland and the regulator in Ireland, because if they are coming, for example, from the UK, it's obviously slightly different for them. So the first thing, I suppose, on the agenda is they are now going to be supervised in Ireland, having gone through an authorisation process. So what is it like for a regulated firm to be supervised in Ireland? In Ireland, we use this approach called PRISM, the Probability, Risk and Impact System. What is that?
Well, the PRISM framework is the Central Bank of Ireland's risk-based approach to supervision. It's a philosophy, it's a minimum engagement model, and it's a software tool that the supervisors use to kind of drive and track and record what it is that they do. And so the regulator supervises about 10,000 firms across all the different sectors. So they had to come up with a way of, I suppose, categorizing all of those firms, and that was the impact side of it. So all 10,000 firms are given an impact category, which is low, medium high or high. There are only about kind of 20-25 high, and then there are, you know, over 9,000 low impact firms. Behind each of those impact categories, there's a what's called a minimum engagement model. And that's so that all regulated entities coming into the jurisdiction have a kind of an understanding of what the expectations are in relation to their supervisory engagement. So if you're a high impact firm, you'll have a kind of a dedicated team of supervisors coming out to do targeted risk assessments on you pretty much on a quarterly basis. It'll be an ongoing dialogue. If you're medium high, you'll have that dialogue or those risk assessments on a slightly less frequent basis and be more set piece engagements. But the real meat or the real differences for the vast population is in whether you are a medium low impact firm or whether you're a low impact firm. So the low impact firms, very much it's a reactive or trigger-based approach to supervision. Most of your interactions with the regulator are going to be driven by either a problem that you have found, or a problem that you've reported, or that you haven't met a regulatory requirement, or you haven't reported on time. So it's that reactive piece. And then you might also be included in thematic reviews that the central bank do from time to time on maybe, you know, outsourcing or minimum competency code requirements or conflict of interest or culture, something of that nature. Whereas if you're in the medium-low space, you will have a supervisor. You'll know the name of that supervisor, and they will have a minimum engagement model where they have to come out. You'll be on a cycle for full risk assessments, and you will also be included in the thematic reviews. But it's a more structured piece where the key officers of your company are going to be interviewed maybe every 18 months. They'll come out and interview the CFO and the CEO and the directors. And then you might be in the kind of either the full or targeted risk assessment space thereafter.
And so what kind of factors does the central bank take into account when they are going through the rating process?
The impact piece is entirely metric driven. So on the central bank's website, it gives you the impact metrics that are used for each sector, whether you're an insurer or a fund service provider or a bank. And then there isn't a kind of a hard and fast, you know, if you get to a score of 100, you're low or medium low. It's a relative impact scale. So the metrics are kind of driven by the returns that you put in. That allocates companies into their impact category. And then the supervision team have a kind of resource capability based on the number of firms and their impact. And then you have that baseline level of engagement is driven by the impact piece. But when any risks that are there, the PRISM framework has 10 risk categories, and supervisors for medium low, medium high and high impact firms have to rate each firm under each of those 10 categories. And if you have a kind of a medium high or a high risk rating under any of those categories, you would have a kind of more regulatory interaction, or they try to move that risk rating down into an acceptable term. And so that's why you have the baseline level from impact and an increased level of supervision based on the actual risks in kind of a particular to your firm.
So where would we typically see fund management companies fall on the
most of them are going to be in the low impact kind of cohort. And there's quite a few in the medium low, but I'd say 90-95% are in the kind of low impact. And so most of their interactions are going to be thematic in nature. So get your returns in on time, anything that you have to do, make sure you kind of do it. There's no point in letting yourself raise red flags needlessly.
So if you miss a filing or something like that, you might find that either it's something that causes the regulator to engage with you directly, or if maybe if the regulator sees a pattern, when they come to the next thematic inspection, your firm is on the list. So because when they pick firms for the thematic inspections, it's not entirely random. There is a sort of a methodology to it.
Quite often not random. Some of the thematic reviews are random in nature because that's what they're trying to achieve. But if it's an area that's causing concern, or as you say, Danny, where there's kind of either kind of complaints or issues that they've noticed across the cohort, then that's how they react to it. And that you put out a thematic review. So typically the questionnaire will go out to firms in that sector. You know, what are you doing in relation to a particular area? What are your structures, your policies, your procedures? What are the issues? Have the board signed off on it? Are you aware of it? They get that questionnaire back and they'll filter that and then select, you know, 10 or 20 or 30 firms, depending on the topic at hand. And they'll either look for interviews or more kind of a further questionnaire, and ultimately they'll come out on site and want to kind of, you know, test what it is that you've submitted or test the area under consideration.
So most of the fund management calls will probably fall into the low impact category. What is it then that causes them to go across the threshold and into the low medium impact?
It's size. It's a function of size on the kind of balance sheet, and so the funds under management.
Right. So there's no hard number, no. But we typically would see firms with sort of the low 10, so 7, 8, 9, 10 billion are probably in the low impact category. Once you get to the sort of the teens and the mid teens, then you're sort of in that gray zone where you depending on what your activity is.
Probably not a bad interpretation of the threshold. There isn't, as you say, there isn't a hard number on it.
Yeah.
But as a guideline, that's probably not not inaccurate.
Yeah, because of course the thing to remember about Prism is that it is a tool to aid supervisors. It is not the way that firms are supervised. It is the tool to help supervisors, because supervisors are.
It's the framework for supervision to operate, and so it's just there to kind of to guide supervisors. So the firms are in the medium low impact category, and they are Manco. That means this level of engagement, and that team is going to supervise them.
And so one of the impacts or one of the consequences of your rating is for example, around your supervisory levy. So for low impact fund Mancos, I think it's around €9,500 per year. If you are medium low, it jumps 10 times. It's about 95,000. So it's quite a big difference. And I suppose that reflects the level of the extra level of supervision, active supervision that you get as a medium low firm, that there is that much more interaction.
Yeah.
And they're kind of recouping their costs for it.
Yeah, well it does. And maybe just kind of by way of example, if you're a medium low impact firm, there's something like 0.165 supervisors allocated to supervising you. Whereas if you are a low impact firm, there's a team who are supervising either a population of hundreds or thousands of entities. And so it's a different scale of interaction and a different scale, different nature of supervision.
So you will see a lot more of the regulator most likely if you fall into that medium low category. And so Prism has worked quite well. It's there probably since the crisis, probably about 10 years there at this stage. I suppose some of the firms coming across from particularly the UK might find in the UK they were kind of a small fish in a big pond, and they come to Ireland and they find that they're a slightly bigger fish in a slightly smaller pond, and find that as a result they end up maybe in the UK equivalent, they were in a lower category, and here they're in maybe a medium low, and they end up having a bit more supervision than they are used to.
Yeah.
That's probably just a function of the different sizes of the markets.
I think you're right, Danny. I mean, in the UK, there's probably 75,000 firms rather than 9,000 that are here. So to get into the kind of higher impact buckets in the UK model would require a significantly greater size. Mm. So as you say, the size of the fish may not have changed, but the size of the pond they're operating in can.
Yeah. And so just to be aware that might be a consequence. It's not a problem, especially just is.
It will be a change for new entrants to coming into Ireland, because they may be going from what was either no or very limited interaction with the UK authorities to a more proactive piece here. And I would really encourage firms to kind of be proactive on that side of it, and try and engage as much as you can with the central bank and with your supervisors.
Yeah, so that's a good point. So in addition to Prism and the way that the regulator supervises, what can firms expect of the regulator in Ireland? So what is it like to be regulated here and to be supervised and interact with the central bank?
Well, actually, it's a kind of a personal view on it, Danny, but I think the central bank are fairly clear compared to other regulators. The guidance that's up on the website is pretty clear. The Prism engagement model is fairly clear. And the attitude of the central bank and the supervisors for entrants either considering coming in or kind of new to the market is quite open. So it is, please engage early, please talk with us. It's from the central bank perspective, they are welcoming for discussions. They want to understand who's coming into the market so that they can react accordingly, so that they can plan and resource it accordingly, and also that to help them in their gatekeeper role to make sure that when a firm is coming in here that it meets the regulatory expectations coming in, and the firms are clearer on what they have to do before they set up.
Yeah, and of course here we don't have a regulatory sandbox at the moment, but we do have the Innovation Hub, which is another way of the regulator engaging with innovation in the industry and trying to understand what it is that firms are doing.
It is, and then I suppose outside of that, you also have quite a lot of new and innovative companies coming from different parts of Europe and indeed the UK. It's, we're a little bit different, or we approach the market a little bit differently, or our customers are a little bit different, and the central bank are open to discussing with people, those differences and, what might be idiosyncratic about a particular business model or a particular firm.
Yeah, and from a regulatory policy perspective, the regulator is very transparent. They have published all of their rules. They're all available through the website, all of their guidance. They have Q&A documents that they continuously update as they get either queries generated internally or from external stakeholders. They do try to produce a Q&A so that everybody knows what the answer is.
And they also speak at quite a lot of kind of public events to try and get the message out as well.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. And they are very active at international organizations like ESMA, the European Securities and Markets Authority, and IOSCO, the International Organization of Securities Commissioners. And that's partly to build connections with other regulators. It's partly, I suppose, part of their mandate. And I think it also looks to the fact, and you will see more of that engagement, that with the UK out of the EU, that's one of a member state that we would have tended to have a lot of allegiances and a lot of common views of the world with. And with them no longer part of those discussions, it's about building networks with other regulators too.
It is, and it's kind of, it was always important to have those networks, and it's now probably increasingly important, because as you say, once you lose a kind of a key ally in a lot of the policy negotiations at an international level, you really have to kind of beef up your own approach to it. And you kind of see that some of the guys in the central bank have kind of taken on kind of more chair roles within the likes of ESMA or with EIOPA, with the European Banking Authority, and they're engaging more with IOSCO and some of those committees.
Yeah.
And they've kind of restructured as well some of the kind of supervisory directorates, but kind of focusing a little bit now. You'll have noticed that the change in relation to wholesale market conduct, and that whole risk piece is kind of coming from an IOSCO paper in kind of June 2017. So the bank have restructured that under Colm Kincaid, and I suppose it's a new piece that's coming into.
Well, maybe we'll wrap up by just talking about that. So what could fund management companies then expect as a result of this? So obviously they have a new pillar with a director general on the conduct side and much more focus on conduct, as you said. So what can firms expect in practice as a result?
Well, historically, conduct was always in relation to retail customers. And what's happening more now is the kind of greater understanding, given that kind of on the wholesale side of things, that there wasn't the same trust in some respects due to either the transparency or integrity of the market, or the perceived transparency or integrity of the market. So the central bank issued a Dear CEO letter to a lot of companies in March, actually just gone there a few weeks ago, setting out the kind of central bank's expectations in relation to wholesale market conduct. So they're looking at things, they want companies to have policies and procedures in relation to how they're dealing with market conduct. Make sure you have a risk assessment done. Make sure that you are kind of monitoring your arrangements in relation to wholesale market conduct, that you have metrics around it. And that, maybe that you're looking at the fees that you charge, the performance fees, if they're relevant. What do they say about your business model? Are they transparent? Is it fair? Are your conflicts of interest in your business model thoroughly understood? It's an increasing area, and I think there will be more thematic reviews kind of coming out of this, if not later this year, certainly into the future, as that kind of gets more traction and gets more understood.
And so it's no coincidence that in the last week or so, we've had a letter from the regulator on fitness and probity and how firms are approaching that and properly supervising it. And then also last year, they flagged that they would like to see an individual accountability regime fleshed out and built upon. So all on that theme of conduct.
It's all on conduct, but it's kind of conduct nearly as a subset of culture. So for the last 18 months, there's been a lot of focus on the culture of firms and the culture of the financial services industry and how it can rebuild the trust that it would have had historically. And the means through which that's being driven from a regulatory context include the kind of continuing to focus on culture, more discussion around product oversight and governance arrangements. And then when you get to wholesale market conduct, that's another strand to that discussion. But it's, if you see when Solvency II come in on an insurance context, it's looking for more robust governance and consumer protection. You have MiFID II coming in, really looking for kind of transparency around conflicts of interest, around costs and charges. And then the European Banking Authority and the insurance authorities are coming back now to kind of focus again and more so on the transparency piece around the costs and the fairness. And this conversation is going to keep evolving. And the banking and the insurance and the securities market authorities are working closer together now. So it's a much more joined up conversation than might have been the case historically.
Yeah, great. Well, listen, thank you very much for that, Dave. Very useful insight. So we talked about PRISM and how fund management companies can expect to be supervised once they come to Ireland. And then also in terms of the landscape and what it looks like, conduct being a big part of that. So very much to keep that in mind and keep the antenna up for new developments on that front.
Yeah, and just to, I suppose the message would be to don't treat it as something that's different to your business model. It is your business model. And just the more clearly you can kind of embrace it and articulate it throughout what it is you're doing, the easier it's going to be to do, to comply with, and to demonstrate.
Great. Thank you very much for your thoughts, Dave. Really appreciate you co-hosting. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Request Academy demystifies funds regulation and jargon, helping you march up the learning curve. If you want to see how good we are at what we do, apply for free in-person 45-minute masterclass. Check out Equest.ie for more details.
The Equest Podcast. Funds Industry Conversations.